Thanks for checking out the Reveal Vineyard podcast. Our mission is simple. Find God, find others, find yourself. That's it. We hope through these conversations, your spirit will be stirred. For more information on Reveal, you can visit our website at www.revealvineyard.com.
All right. Well, I brought a chair up here because I'm kind of sore, so I needed the ability to sit down every now and then. So we're beginning a new series today that looks at the life of Daniel. And while we're not actually going to go through the entire book of Daniel chapter by chapter, it's not actually a bad idea for you guys to go over the entire book of Daniel. There's actually a Bible app, the YouVersion app for any smart device. You can even get it online. And they actually have a Bible reading plan called Courage from the book of Daniel. It's only 7 days, and I have to say I've read through it, and it would be a great addition to the series that we're going to be going through. But as I began thinking about Daniel, my mind was instantly grabbed by the title of the series, this idea of stand. And Daniel was someone who took stands. His friends took stands. And not only did he take stands, but Daniel stood out. And he stood out in impactful ways. And so sometimes there were in ways that earned him enemies, but at the same time, there were always ways that honored the name of God. And it's easy to just dismiss Daniel's story as like one of good character. Well, this is a story about good character. Daniel had good character. Yay for Daniel. Let's move on. But I really think there's a lot more going on in this story, especially in light of the context of Daniel's story. Now, for those of you who don't know, Daniel was the son of Jewish nobles. So he was kind of the creme of the crop as far as high society of Jewish culture at that time. But he lived in Jerusalem at a time when the Jewish culture was at its worst. Evil had permeated their society in so many ways. In fact, if you read some of the prophets, the books of the prophets prior to the book of Daniel, they are literally prophesying about Jerusalem during the time that Daniel's living there. And so these prophets were calling out to Israel and basically saying, look, you need to repent before God disciplines you, and it's not going to be fun. And so unfortunately for Daniel, Israel did not repent, and then during the third year of King Jehoiakim's reign over Judah, God allowed King Nebuchadnezzar to conquer Israel. And so King Nebi, that's what we'll call him so I don't get tongue-tied, King Nebi captured the city of Jerusalem. He burns the temple, carries off a lot of their treasures and religious artifacts, and then he takes captive along with him whoever he decides he wants to take. So among those captives was, guess who? There was like three people who said that. So among those captives was, guess who? Thank you. Somebody read their Bible. Awesome. And so he watched his country get annihilated by Babylon. He was uprooted from his homeland. He was torn from his family and then sent to a foreign land that was hostile to his faith and his culture. So his entire way of life was an offense to the place that he was now going to be living. And many scholars estimated that Daniel was between the ages of 12 and 15. So here you have this young boy or this, you know, maturing boy, anywhere from a young middle schooler to maybe a sophomore in high school. Very young. So he's vulnerable. He doesn't really have a lot of authority or power. But needless to say, his character that surfaces is remarkable. And the strength that Daniel displays for me, it was quite impressive. Now, the beauty of Daniel's story and the reminder for me here is that Daniel decided to stand out. And God met him at each step of the way. And God did what only God could have done in those circumstances. But Daniel had to stand first. He took the first step and God met him there. So as I was reading about Daniel's situation, it kind of got me thinking, you know, could I have endured something like this? Could I have done the same thing that Daniel did if I was in his circumstances? Well, what would that look like in a modern day context? You know, we don't really have kingdoms anymore, at least not where we live. And I thought, you know, it would kind of be like if I lived in Washington, D.C., where our nation's capital is, and some extremist Islamic group came, and I'm not trying to get into the whole let's hate Muslims thing here. Some extremist Islamic State group comes and takes me. They burn the Capitol. They burn all the churches in Washington, D.C. They tear me away from my family, uproot me, take me to some remote village or city in the Middle East. And then I'm there as a captive living under a very strict Sharia law where my faith would put me in a very tense predicament. Because right off the bat, I could either convert to Islam or I could pay what they call as a non-Muslim tax. And if you're not familiar with this, it's basically an extortion fee that if you don't pay it, they're like, okay, well, we'll just kill you then. How's that? Okay, maybe I will pay this extortion fee. So I tried to imagine, could I do that? You know, could I endure the culture change, the dietary differences, and even the change in amenities? I mean, it's not like I'd be living in this great house with air conditioning and modern plumbing and, you know, cable television and high-speed internet. None of that stuff would be there. And even if I got through that change, could I adjust to being persecuted for my faith and being genuine in my faith? Would I be willing to stand firm when asked to pledge allegiance to some extremist leader who I just thought was completely off his rocker? Now, if I take into consideration Daniel's story, I would have to ask another question. Could I do all that I just asked and still seek the prosperity of my capturers? Could I allow myself to become one of their greatest assets to their daily living? Now, I'd like to think that I could do all of this, but if I'm being honest, yeah, I got my doubts. The reality is, without the power of God moving me in each of those moments at each step of the way, it's not in me. It's not in me. The resolve is not there. Now, I know that this seems like a far-fetched scenario to us, but for Daniel, these kind of threats were just the way of life. It was very real for something that they experienced all the time. Now, that hasn't been that way for us. We've lived in this extreme freedom. We've had all these amenities and all these opportunities and abilities. But the disappointing thing in all of this, and I'm including myself in this, okay, is that even though we live in a time and a place where it should be so easy to stand out for God, most of us fail to. I don't know of many other cultures in history that would have been easier to just to be bold in your faith than ours. And yet we tend to simply blend in, sometimes with our faith going completely unnoticed. And so we fail to stand for change. We fail to stand for the prosperity of our nation or our nation's morale because we're afraid of the perceived consequences. Because it's easy, if we're honest, it's easy to rally around a war cry when our freedom and our safety is threatened. But for whatever reason, we tend to shrink back when it means standing out from among our peers with regards to our faith, our ethics, or even our morals. Now, the ridicule for some of being different is just far too much for us to endure. Now, I know that sounds ugly when I put it that way, and I hope it doesn't. However, I mean, I just can't deny that there is this growing and continual yearning inside of me that is so desperate to see our church and our communities break free from that mold. So how did Daniel do it? I mean, his circumstances were far worse than ours. So what was different about him that enabled him to stand out in the way that he did? Well, let's go ahead and just actually jump into the book of Daniel, and let's take a look at this. So if you have your Bibles, we'll go ahead and begin in Daniel chapter 1, starting in verse 1. And in verse 1 it reads that during the third year of King Jehoiakim's reign in Judah, King Nebuchadnezzar, King Nebi, of Babylon came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Lord gave him victory over King Jehoiakim of Judah and permitted him to take some of the sacred objects from the temple of God. So Nebuchadnezzar took them back to the land of Babylonia and placed them in the treasure house of his God. So right away we see King Nebi coming in and taking away everything that the Jewish people had. Now in addition, God was behind the whole thing. Now that's kind of a hard pill to swallow. I mean, it'd be one thing to endure this battle knowing that God is on your side and he's rooting for you and he wants you to beat these people. But it's another thing to sit back and go, you know, this is happening because God made it happen. He warned us and we ignored him. So continuing in verse 3, it says, then the king ordered Ashpenaz. Now there's a name you don't hear in culture very often anymore. The king ordered Ashpenaz, his chief of staff, to bring to the palace some of the young men of Judah's royal family and other noble families who had been brought to Babylon as captives. Select only strong, healthy, and good-looking young men, he said. Make sure they are well-versed in every branch of learning, are gifted with knowledge and good judgment, and are suited to serve in the royal palace. Train these young men in the language and literature of Babylon. The king assigned them a daily ration of food and wine from his own kitchens. They were to be trained for 3 years, and then they would enter the royal service. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were four of the young men chosen, all from the tribe of Judah. The chief of staff renamed them with these Babylonian names. Daniel was called Belteshazzar. Hananiah was called Shadrach. Mishael was called Meshach. Azariah was called Abednego. Do you see what's happening here? Right off the bat, King Nebi has this process that he puts his captives through. Now, the first thing he did was he isolated the finest and the brightest. See, he wasn't going to waste his time on small fish. He was going to go after the big fish. He wanted those who already had leverage with everybody else, and he was going to convert them. So he was going for the big fish. He was going for the finest and the brightest. The second thing that he did was that he stripped them of their identity. He retrained them in Babylonian culture. He taught them the language. He took their birth names that were tied to their Yahweh God, their true God, and gave them new names that were tied to his gods. He said, you're no longer identified with that God. You're identified with my God. He stripped them of their identities. I guess you could say that King Nebi's intent was basically to brainwash these young men and then reintroduce them into Babylonian society once they met the standards. Remember, these are 12 to 15-year-olds that we're talking about. Very, very moldable, very influenced. Now, up to this point, Daniel is able to brush aside all of these things. I mean, it wasn't going to hurt him or injure him to learn a new language. I mean, if anything, it would enable him to communicate more effectively. It wasn't going to cause him to compromise his character just to simply study their history and culture. These were just facts that he had the freedom to interpret through his own worldview. Even having his name changed didn't bother him. It might look shameful on him from others' perspectives, but he knew who he really was. It didn't matter what people called him. He knew that deep down inside he was Daniel. However, there was a problem with the food for him. And it wasn't so much about what was on the menu, but rather who the menu was aimed at honoring. You see, King Nebi assigned these captives daily rations from his own table. Now, some might have seen this as a bright light and in other words, dark story. Well, you're captive, but you can eat really, really good food. It's like having prime rib every day. You know, it's like, okay, I got to weigh my options here. But Daniel knew that the meat was sacrificed to pagan gods. It was announced, paraded, and broadcast. And Daniel didn't mind his name being put to shame, but he would not allow God's name to be put to shame. And his conviction of eating food sacrificed to idols just wouldn't let him go. So picking back up in your Bibles in verse 8, it reads, but Daniel was determined, we're going to go back to that word, Daniel was determined not to defile himself by eating the food and wine given to them by the king. He asked the chief of staff for permission not to eat these unacceptable foods. Now God had given the chief of staff both respect and affection for Daniel. But he responded, I am afraid of my lord the king who has ordered that you eat this food and wine. If you become pale and thin compared to the other youths your age, I'm afraid the king will have me beheaded. Daniel spoke with the attendant who had been appointed by the chief of staff to look after Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Please test us for 10 days on a diet of vegetables and water, Daniel said. At the end of the 10 days, see how we look compared to the other young men who are eating the king's food. Then make your decision in light of what you see. The attendant agreed to Daniel's suggestion and tested them for 10 days. Now, at the end of the 10 days, Daniel and his three friends looked healthier and better nourished than the young men who had been eating the food assigned by the king. So after that, the attendant fed them only vegetables instead of the food and wine provided for the others. So Daniel has his back pinned against the wall, okay? His exceptional abilities, his character, and even his physical appearance has put him in a predicament where he was being given a food to eat that he knew was being sacrificed to pagan gods. Now, this would bring shame on the name of his God, and Daniel wasn't about to have any of it. So instead of being some stubborn goat that just made his neck stiff and refused, he applies wisdom to the situation, which is really representative of how Daniel approached his daily life. You know, because in the end, you know, one of the hills we talk about that it's all about Jesus. You know, for Daniel, it was all about God. He hadn't met Jesus yet, but it was all about God. So whatever he did, it was all about God. That was one of his hills that he was going to die on. So Daniel wasn't looking to create drama or start a rebellion. However, when it came to honoring God's name, he was adamant about it. He was adamant about it. The thing that Daniel does here, which makes him stand out, is that Daniel stood for the right things in the right way and at the right time. And this is kind of what I want to unpack for the rest of our time here this morning. So first things first, Daniel stood for the right things, okay? He didn't argue the point that he was a prisoner. He didn't see his injustices as something that needed to be stood up for. He would stand for God, and he would allow God to stand for him. And in the meantime, he would be useful in his current circumstances. So if you go on to read the rest of the book of Daniel, you'll see how Daniel was an amazing asset for Babylon. The gifts and abilities that God gave him saved his life and the lives of others many times over. So many times we stand for the wrong things, especially within the church. Now, please hear me. One of the hills that we have here is that we don't wear masks. And so I'm just going to be very honest and transparent with you today, and I'm sharing my heart. And so I'm not here to put shame on anyone. I'm not here to condemn anyone. If anyone feels condemned, I'm condemning myself in the process because I'm guilty of the same things that I'm going to kind of share this morning. So especially within the church, we tend to stand for the wrong things. Okay, we picket movie theaters. We attack the moral standards of those outside the church. Or we simply divorce ourselves from other believers over one point of theology. You know, it saddens me how vocal the church was over things like Pokemon or Harry Potter or the Golden Compass. And I'm not even suggesting that you even like these things. And yet we were so vocal for this stuff. But if I'm being honest, the church as a whole is far too silent when it comes to divorce. How rampant it is, how destructive it is to the families. So instead of being vocal about movies and things that we can just choose not to see, why don't we take those efforts and build healthy marriages and strong families and teach parents how to impact their kids, that they would have a faith that would carry on? We're standing for the wrong things. You know, we get pretty emotionally heated about political candidates, but we don't fight for the fatherless in our communities. There are too many kids in our country, not just outside the U.S., that don't have dads that are speaking into their lives, and that there are plenty of men here that could. We're standing for the wrong things. You see, Daniel stood for the right things, and the right things were not necessarily the things that benefited him. Okay, by asking to be released from the food portions, he was actually putting himself at risk of being killed, and he was putting the lives of others at risk. So it wasn't so much, well, what can I get out of this, and let me stand for that thing. He was standing for what was right in the eyes of God. So I would challenge all of us, do the things that we get passionate for, do the things that we speak out about, do they bring honor to God, or do they just benefit us and push our own agendas and our own wishes and desires? Now, the second thing that Daniel did is that he took a stand in the right way. Okay, so the first thing he did, he stood for the right things, then he took a stand in the right way. So when presented with the menu, Daniel didn't go off on some self-righteous tirade about how he would not put any of that defiled meat in his body. He didn't turn to social media and spew his disdain for the meat choices that other Jews would willingly be making. If you go back and read the passage, Daniel and his friends weren't the only Jews. They were just four of the captives. So that means that there were plenty other Jewish people that didn't have a problem eating the meat. Maybe they rationalized it away. I'm sure they knew the tension. I'm sure they felt that tension. And I mean, what other options did they have? It was that or die. Well, Daniel didn't look to amass support through some means of a religious campaign. He simply leveraged what little influence that he had with the attendant in what appears to be a private conversation. You know, if the king got wind of what the attendant were about to do, it could cost him his life. So I'm pretty confident that Daniel was smart enough to ask him for this favor in a way that wouldn't put this big spotlight on him. You know, he's not calling him out in front of a large group of people. He's just pulling him off to the side and just saying, hey, look, I can't do this. Can you help me out here? Can we try something? Can we work on this? Now, when we have moral crossroads in life, we don't need to make a big deal about them. Okay? If we make a moral choice about something, the whole world on Facebook doesn't need to know. Okay? They don't need to know. We just simply need to do the right things and do them in the right way. Our goal should be to honor God, not shame others who might disagree with our choices. Let me give you an example. And again, we're not bringing masks, okay? So I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I could spend more time talking about my negative attributes. I'm just going to point out a few good ones that I've happened to come across. Because of my past sins, okay, I don't watch movies or TV shows that are sensual or lustful in nature. I just don't. And so basically that means there's not a whole lot of TV I can watch. I tend to just watch sports. And if we do watch a movie, I watch far more kid shows on Netflix than anything else. If we do watch a movie, I have an app. It's called Kids in Mind. And the app tells you, you know, what the violence rating is, what the profanity ratings are, and what the sexual ratings are of each of the movies. It kind of gives us these little stars. And if it's under a certain amount of stars, I'll say, hey, you know, I'll talk to my wife and say, hey, can you read through those and see what the scenarios are? Because I can't read the scenarios because then I'll imagine them. And so if there's anything bad in there, we kind of avoid it. But if it's good, we move forward and we watch the movie. Now, there have been times when we're out with friends and spontaneously someone says, hey, let's go watch a movie. And, oh, I really want to watch this movie. And so I end up in a movie that I didn't get a chance to read this app on. Or sometimes I'll go to a friend's house and, you know, they want to watch a movie and we'll watch a movie and I didn't read the app. And sure enough, the movie goes somewhere where I didn't want to go. And when this happens, what I typically do is I stand up, I knock over my chair, I throw my popcorn in the air, and I say, I cannot believe you brought me to watch this filth. My eyes are here to only honor God. How dare you? Okay, that's not what I do. Usually what I do is I just sit down, and I just lean over, and I just say, Marty, why did you bring me to this film? Okay, I'm kidding. That's what you get for being out of town. No, I'm kidding. No, honestly, what I do, it's very revolutionary, okay? I just close my eyes. I just close my eyes. But I don't make a big deal about it, okay? I do it discreetly, you know? It's my thing. It's not your thing. And my wife knows, and so when the scene is passed, she'll just nudge me and, you know, we'll go on and watch the movie. Now, if the movie is nothing but these kinds of scenes, well, it's just time to get up and quietly leave the theater. I don't have to go trumping off. I don't have to yell anything out in the theater. I get up and leave. And I've actually, there's only been one movie that I've ever walked out on that I just couldn't take it anymore, and I got up and left. I won't tell you what the movie is. You'll have to ask me in private just in case someone gets offended. But I did walk out of one movie. So again, my wife knows. She'll nudge me. We move on. Now, all of that to say, please don't invite me to go see the 50 Shades of Grey movie with you, okay? It's not happening, all right? Just don't even ask me. We're not going there. So Daniel took a stand for the right things in the right way, and finally he took a stand at the right time, okay? Now, this isn't what you think, all right? Because Daniel didn't decide in that specific moment that he was presented with the king's food that he would not defile God. He was predetermined in his heart and mind that he would never do such a thing. See, Daniel made daily decisions that enabled him to make tough ones when the moment arose. Daniel was determined, if you go back and look at that verse, past tense, not to defile himself and so bring shame upon his God. The daily choices that we make and how we interact with people and how we handle our faith and what boundaries we place on ourselves, well, they're going to set us up for future success or failure when those trials in life present themselves. Think about it. Do you think that if Daniel had neglected his faith for the most part of his life, that he would just have this spiritual renewal after he had been captured? And so when faced with imprisonment and potentially death, that he's just all of a sudden going to rise up and be the super spiritual person? No. If anything, he's going to be focused on self-preservation, which is what I think was happening to the rest of those Jewish guys. You know, they neglected their souls. And so when they were put in that circumstance, they just didn't have the resolve to stand up and take a stand. And so they gave in, they blended in, they went with the flow. And that's why one of our heels are that we have to grow in our faith. I mean, this is part of it, but this is such a small part. I mean, this is what, for some of you, 1 hour a week, for some of you, maybe 45 minutes if you come in late. I mean, you don't eat one meal a week. You don't work out one day of the year and go, I'm fit. It's something you have to continually do. And so growing your faith is something you have to continually do. There are daily decisions that make a huge impact when issues arrive. Now, to me, this is a huge issue in our culture and especially within the church. We neglect our spiritual walks. And yet somehow we think that whatever weak link we have to Jesus is supposed to rescue us or sustain us when those trials come or when those temptations come. For instance, you may be predetermined to remain sexually pure until you're married, but if you start thinking about that when you're in the backseat of someone's car, good luck with that. Okay, you may decide that I'm going to remain faithful to my wife until I depart this earth. But if those thoughts are only surfacing when you're having dinner with the opposite sex, not looking good. See, when we predetermine something, we're making daily choices to stay away from those things that would take us in an otherwise negative way. Now, for instance, again, the last time I'm going to toot my own horn here, I don't ride in cars with women by myself. I don't do it. I had a pastor who taught me a long time ago, if you're in leadership, you don't do this. It may be okay for some, but it's not okay for you, is what he used to say. It may be okay for others, but for you, it's not okay. And I cannot tell you the feeling that I get if I'm even presented with that option. I mean, I feel like my old pastor's going to like come kicking through the door and go, what are you thinking, you know? And so I don't even like to meet with women by myself. I don't meet with women in private. And if I do meet with women, I do it in a public place. And on pain of death, I try to have a third person there. Because it's just awkward for me. You know, I know that may be laughable, but, you know, for most of you, if you ever come into children's ministry, you're going to get to meet my wife, or you're going to get to meet Adonai or some of the other children's ministry leaders, because I don't like to meet with people in private in that way. You may think that's funny. I even feel uncomfortable when I'm with my sister by myself. Every now and then I'll meet with my sister, and the problem is none of you know my sister. And so you see me with my sister, you don't know she's my sister. You're like, huh? And so anytime I bump into somebody and I'm with her, my instinct is like, I've got to let them know this is my sister. Hey, how you doing? Hey, it's my sister. My sister over here. You, I know you recognize me. Sister. We're good. And you think it's funny, and it is to some degree, but I cannot tell you the conviction I feel when I'm sitting there, even though I'm in a public place, and it's just me and this one other person. I went, man, I couldn't get that third person here, and there's just something inside of me that's going, this is not the way you want to do things. So there are my quirks. There's my little good plug for what I do well, and you can meet with me and my wife and spend a week talking about what I don't do well. Here's the thing. This is where the going gets tough for many of us, because we don't like to stand out when it makes us look weird. I mean, it's okay to stand out when it's about our physical appearance or our physical abilities or our intellect, but when it's something that has to do with our morals or our faith, it kind of makes us uncomfortable. And if we have not predetermined in our hearts and minds about particular issues that will present themselves when the time comes, I fear that most of us will likely just shrink back and just try to blend in. Because it's the easy thing to do. No one ever condemns you for it. No one ever says, how could you dare that, blend in and dress like me and be like me and act like me? If anything, we applaud that. Our culture just, we cheer it on. Now, maybe you're here thinking this morning that no one is asking you to eat meat sacrificed to idols. I get that. I've yet to be the market where it says this one is for the god blah, blah, blah. Or this one is for the god, you know, I don't even know their names. I try to say their names when I read the Old Testament, and I always mispronounce them. So you're not being asked to eat meat sacrificed to idols. I get that. But we have been asked to consider sexual encounters outside the context of marriage, whether that was a literal ask or maybe just through some means of suggestion. We've all been asked to consider compromising our character when it comes to the sake of financial gain. You know, whether it's all, you know, been little things like, you know, make little harmless lies on your taxes, or, you know, they're just harmless things. You know, they're not harming anybody, but they benefit you. So what's the big deal, right? Well, the big deal is that when we live a life like that, we make those kind of daily decisions, we just begin blending in with the crowd and moving closer to obscurity. And then when the world needs someone to stand out and show them the different way, the right way, we're not there. We're not even available. In Matthew 5, Jesus said that we're supposed to be the salt of the earth, that we're supposed to be the light of the world. And basically what he's saying is that we're supposed to stand out, but not in an obnoxious way, but rather in a way that shows the love of God working in us and through us. Jesus said in John 13 that we would know, or the world would know, I should say, that we're followers of his by the way we love others. So your love for God and for others should speak much louder than your bumper stickers or your catchy t-shirt slogans or any other cleverly marketed item. And please hear me. I am not shaming or condemning anyone that likes Christian products, okay? But enjoy them for what they are, that you just like them. Don't let them be the thing that has to speak for who you are. Are we tracking with that one? So I'm not shaming that stuff. I'm just saying let it be something you enjoy and not something that speaks for who you are. Because I knew plenty of guys in the military. They drive around playing their gospel music in their cars. But they weren't playing gospel music when they had the sweeties over to the dorm room. That's when Luther came out. Okay? So it doesn't matter what products you have. What daily decisions are you making? that are setting you up for future success or failure. Because look, if we don't stand out, we will eventually blend in. And when we simply blend in, we fail to give the next generation a reason to stand out. I would rather be remembered for standing out than forgotten for blending in. I'm willing to endure a little discomfort and even some pain if it means that what I stand for will have an impact on my family, that will establish a legacy for my kids and for their kids to come after. Because I want to know that I sacrificed whatever I had to ensure that future generations were sold out for Christ because of it. Because it's not enough for me just to exist and be comfortable. I don't want to be just a chapter in my family's history. There is nothing that would grieve me more than at the end of my life or to know that my kids and their kids just walked away from Christ because it just didn't mean anything. So I have to make it mean something. I have to live my life in a way that I stand out and it means something because of it. And I would charge that some of you guys, you need to do that as well. Now, I really feel like God is challenging us. I feel like he's challenging me to stand out. Now, some of you, you've been far too loose with certain things, and it's time for you to rein them in. It's time to be determined that you are not going to bring shame on the name of God in the way you handle your sexuality, in the way you handle your money, your relationships, your times, your resources, or even your spiritual walk. And for some of us, it's time to put a stake in the ground and declare that you're not going to fall prey to the schemes of the enemy because he's very crafty at this stuff. It's time to put your questionable behavior and decisions on notice. And if that's you, you need to stand up. It's time to take a stand. Take a stand for the right things. Ask God to give you the wisdom to stand in the right way and begin standing at the right time, which is now and every day for the rest of your life. Now, if you read the rest of Daniel chapter 1, you see how much God blessed Daniel and his friends with wisdom and understanding. They eventually took positions of great power and influence, and we'll talk more about that within the Babylonian culture. But listen to me very carefully. I am not saying that if you take a stand for God, that you're going to get a raise or that you're going to get a promotion or somehow you're going to be rich in our culture. I have no idea what God is going to do for you in that arena of life. But what I will say is that it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter. Even if you remain unemployed and on welfare for the remainder of your life here on earth, it is worth it to stand for the right things. You don't have to be rich or successful in order to influence others for Christ. And what I'm confident in is that if we stand for the right things in the right way, in the right time, it will be worth it. And I have to say on a personal level, if I die poor, yet see evidence of faith fully alive in my kids because of what my wife and I decided to sacrifice, to keep our own minds and our hearts pure, I will die the happiest man on this earth. The last thing I'll be thinking about is what my portfolio is. But what I will be thinking about is, are my kids sold out for Christ? Are their hearts truly just in love with him? I can't force that on them, but I can live it in a way that influences them for that. Now, I wanted to end this service by reading a psalm. And really, I want to encourage you guys and challenge you to just make this your prayer for the week, maybe for a month, maybe for some of you, you need to make it your prayer for the year. So I'm going to do something kind of old-fashioned. I'm just going to ask you guys to stand while I read this, and then I will close in prayer, and we'll call it a day. It's Psalm 19. For those of you who want to follow along, I'm not going to put it on the screens, but it reads this. It says, "The heavens proclaim the glory of God. The skies display his craftsmanship. Day after day, they continue to speak. Night after night, they make him known. They speak without a sound or word. Their voice is never heard, yet their message has gone throughout the earth and their words to all the world. God has made a home in the heavens for the sun. It bursts forth like a radiant bridegroom after his wedding. It rejoices like a great athlete eager to run the race. The sun rises at one end of the heavens and follows its course to the other end. Nothing can hide from its heat. The instructions of the Lord are perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. The commandments of the Lord are right, bringing joy to the heart. The commandments of the Lord are clear, giving insight for living. Reverence for the Lord is pure, lasting forever. The laws of the Lord are true. Each one is fair. They are more desirable than gold, even the finest gold. They are sweeter than honey, even honey dripping from the comb. They are a warning to your servant, a great reward for those who obey them. Listen to this last part. How can I know all the sins lurking in my heart? Cleanse me from these hidden faults. Keep your servant from deliberate sins. Don't let them control me. Then I will be free of guilt and innocent of great sin. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. That's my prayer. That's my prayer for me. That's my prayer for you. That we live in a way that we would please God with what comes out of our mouths and what's in our hearts. Because what's floating up in here has an effect on what you feel, and what you feel has an effect on what you command and what you use your strength for. Let the things that are in here and in here be the things that are about Jesus. Jesus.